Hello, welcome to Texas True Crime. I'm your host, Jessica, and I'm so glad that you're back here with me again this week. This is not a Texas crime, but I watched the Natalia Grace follow-up series on Investigation Discovery, where she gets to tell her side of the story. Did any of you watch that? I'm not going to say much because I don't want to spoil it if you're planning to watch it and haven't had a chance, but good grief. The adoptive father, Michael, is so over the top. You can't believe a word that comes out of his mouth. And Christine, the mom, who was dead set on having her age changed, is nowhere to be found. I mean, it was crazy. And then, of course, at the very end, they left you on a cliffhanger because there was another big twist. So I'm sure there'll be another installment, but wow, that's all I got to say. If you've watched it, let me hear your thoughts about it. I personally don't think Natalia was grown. I just think those people were wackadoodle and wanted to get her out of their hair, but not look like bad guys, but they ended up looking like terrible people. Anyway, I've said more than I even intended. So let's get back to our episode. Last week, we started talking about Tom Brown. If you're familiar with this case, you know that it is a big, twisty mess with a lot of he said, she said, and finger pointing amongst a lot of the people involved, including the family, private investigator, and the Hemp Hill County Sheriff's Office, who started the original investigation into Tom's disappearance. We're going to pick up where we left off last week, but let's do a little recap before we jump back in. If you haven't listened to part one, I highly suggest go back to part one and listen to it first and then come back over here. So remember, on November 23rd, 2016, the night before Thanksgiving, Tom Brown left his house to go meet some friends and hang out for the evening. When his curfew came at midnight and he wasn't home, his mother, Penny, became concerned. And she and his older brother, Tucker, went out to look for him. Now, on Thanksgiving morning, around 8 a.m., Tom's Durango was found parked in a remote area, but he was nowhere to be found. Okay, so there's our quick recap, and here we go with part two. Penny Meek, Tom's mom, was already telling people that she didn't think the Hemp Hill County Sheriff's Office was handling Tom's disappearance appropriately. Remember, Penny's had a problem with the sheriff before he was even the sheriff. She mainly, of course, like I said, had a problem with Sheriff Lewis. She said that he did not have enough experience to handle the investigation properly, and she thought that he was saying things that would tarnish Tom's reputation for no reason whatsoever. 7 days after Tom went missing, Penny hired a private investigator out of Nederland, Texas, named Philip Klein of Klein Investigations and Consulting. He has been credited with some high-profile cases, such as looking for Olivia Newton-John's missing boyfriend in Mexico, and the case was even featured on Dateline. Philip Klein says that he has over 30 years of experience, and he charges a lot for his services, between $25,000 and $75,000, to be exact. So that's a lot of money. I've listened to him in many interviews while I've been researching Tom Brown's story, and I can tell you one thing for sure. Philip Klein likes to let you know just how great he is at his job, or at least how great he thinks he is. He's real full of himself, y'all. And you know, hey, you got to have confidence in yourself. But like I said, go back and listen to some, it's easy to find him. Let me know what you think about him. Now, as soon as Klein got to town, he went to introduce himself at the sheriff's office. If Sheriff Nathan Lewis and Philip Klein ever got along, it didn't last very long. Klein has criticized pretty much everything there is about the Hemp Hill County Sheriff's Office. And Sheriff Nathan Lewis did not think much of Klein either. It's a pretty openly hostile relationship. My personal opinion about both men is that neither is setting the world on fire with their great investigative skills. But I'm off track. Sheriff Lewis, whatever his feelings for Klein, did allow him to look at Tom's case file and take some notes from it. After that, Klein started interviewing people in town, and he started with Tom's friends, especially the ones that were with him the night he went missing. Now, all three of them agreed, remember, Caleb King, Michael Castletine, and Christian Webb, all three of the teenagers agreed that on the night that he went missing, Tom was in a good mood and that he seemed like himself. They made plans to see each other the next day after they had spent time with their families for Thanksgiving. So they were really, they just didn't really think that he would have committed suicide. They all said, you know, why would you make plans to see your friends the next day? And they just didn't think that was something that Tom would do. Klein also asked if anyone disliked Tom or if anyone had any problems with him. But all of his friends said that Tom got along with everyone and that everyone liked him, which, from everything I can see, is the consensus. He was a great kid, a nice kid, and really did get along with everyone. Klein also asked if Tom liked to drink or do any drugs. Everyone said no. They said he did not do drugs at all. In fact, he hated them, and that he barely drank ever. Then Klein went to visit Tom's ex-girlfriend, Sage Pennington. Remember, the one that he had broken up with a few months earlier, but was still on really good terms. Now, Sage confirmed the story about the diapers that she had shared with the sheriff's office. Klein then also asked her if she thought Tom would ever commit suicide. But Sage had something a little different to say than his other friends. She said she was unsure what she thought. Sage shared a story with Klein about a time that Tom told her that he had thought about jumping in front of a train. Sage said that she told Tom that wasn't the way to handle things and that he knew that. She continued by saying that ultimately she didn't think Tom would commit suicide, but she just wasn't sure. Tom's friends basically told Klein the same things that they had told the police. They didn't share anything new or earth-shattering, and Klein himself also didn't think that Tom had committed suicide. He thought that it was foul play, and he had two different theories. And these are just two of the first theories. Klein ends up with multiple theories over time, and I'll share them as we get further along in the story. But his first two original theories were this. The first one is that he had gotten involved with someone that no one knew by meeting them online, you know, whether it be internet chat or on Xbox Live, something like that, and that he agreed to meet up with them and they killed him. The second theory was that some kids that Tom knew and was probably friendly with were out playing around with a gun, horsing around, and accidentally shot Tom. Klein said that it was possible that the kids then called a parent or another adult that helped them cover it up instead of just going to the police. He then even said they thought it was a possible cover-up that the police were even involved in. So, here we go. Now, the sheriff's department is possibly involved in a cover-up of Tom's death that they could have helped fix. The sheriff's office has been criticized a lot, and they deserve it. They didn't process Tom's Durango, and they returned it instead of holding onto it so that it wouldn't be tampered with. But I can say one thing. They weren't shy about asking for help. Hemphill County Sheriff's Office did not try to do this whole investigation on their own. Yes, initially they did, but it didn't take long that they called in the Texas Rangers and the FBI for help. Both agencies came to Canadian to help go over everything the Hemphill County Sheriff's Office had found. While they were going over the files, they came across a statement that one of Tom's classmates had made. She said that one day she and Tom had a conversation about how easy it would be to just disappear from Canadian, especially if you didn't take your phone or use any credit cards. You could just slip away, start a new life. The sheriff's office now had a working theory of their own. They believed that Tom left of his own volition to start a new life. Well, rumors flooded the small town, and lots of tips came in about what might have happened to Tom. But none of them panned out, and both the sheriff's office and Klein Investigations had theories, but nothing to back them up at all.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On February 2nd, 2017, an employee from an electric company came into the sheriff's office to report that he had found a backpack that he believed to be Tom Brown's. He had found it leaned against the trunk of a tree, behind a fence, about 4 feet from the road. He had noticed it when he was making his rounds on Lake Marvin Road, 7 miles from where Tom's Durango was found. When he checked inside the backpack, he found some books and papers with Tom's name on them. Instead of moving it, he left it right where it was and notified the sheriff's office. It was, in fact, Tom's backpack, and it was obvious it had been there for quite a while. It was moldy and showed signs of damage from being left outside. The strange thing is that there was no way someone could have thrown it out of a vehicle while they were driving away. It was too far off the road, and it was sitting there leaning against a tree as if someone had purposely put it there. Plus, it was behind a fence. So why would someone go to all that trouble to put it there? It's, you know, you would have to have parked your car, gotten out, climbed over a fence, walked several feet, and then nicely leaned it against a tree. Why not just throw it in the ditch or in a dumpster as you head out down the road? Whether it was Tom or someone else who left it, it just didn't seem to make any sense if you were trying to get rid of evidence. Why be so nice about it? And it was way out of the way from where Tom's Durango had been found. After the backpack was found, things stalled out again. Then, in April of 2017, Klein brought in a well-respected dog handler named Trey Sargent. Now, Trey Sargent is well-known in law enforcement for her cadaver dog named Chance. She let Chance inspect the vehicle, Tom's Durango, and he hit on the driver's side door. But, again, nothing really came from it. And Trace herself even said that just because the dog hit on the driver's side door, that wasn't definite proof that someone had died in there. It just meant that there was biological evidence in there, whether it was spit or semen or blood or something else. At one point or another, all of Tom's friends that he had been with that night were suspects, but they were all eventually cleared. In July of 2017, the investigation had completely stalled out. The sheriff's office, along with the Texas Rangers and the FBI, had no new leads, and neither did Penny's investigator, Philip Klein. So she decided that she should call a press conference, in the Methodist Church. During the press conference, she announced that she did not have any faith in the sheriff's department investigation and that dealing with all the different law enforcement agencies had just been frustrating and confusing. She said they needed answers. After that, for the next few months, it was a back and forth between Philip Klein and Sheriff Nathan Lewis on a popular local radio show hosted by Chris Samples. One man would get on the radio and give tidbits of information and spout a theory, and then the other would come on the show a different day to give their theory that was completely opposite of what the other man had said. But no one really had any leads that were hoping to find Tom. And if you listen to their interviews, a lot of it's just criticizing one another. And that's the thing I don't understand. I completely get it why Penny was frustrated with the sheriff's office. They were inexperienced. They bungled a lot of stuff. They had not been able to locate Tom or get any leads as to where he might be. And they should have called in help even sooner than they did. But Clyde hasn't done any better of a job. And he wasn't making any headway, and all of his things had stalled out too. And to this day, he's still employed by the Meek family, and that cannot be cheap. So I don't understand really why they have stuck with him like they have. 11 months after Tom went missing, on October 14th, 2017, Philip Klein organized a search party along Lake Marvin Road where Tom's backpack had been found. According to Philip Klein, he had received a tip that Tom's body was buried near the same place that his backpack had been found. 150 volunteers showed up to help in the search. The search had barely started when a woman started yelling that she had found something. She was at the very start of Lake Marvin Road, and it was an iPhone. The phone they found was not in any kind of a case, and it looked like it was in almost perfect condition. If it was actually Tom's phone, it would have been, had to have been lying out there for in that field on the side of the road for 11 months. Now, it had been a very wet year with rain and an ice storm, and that section of road had been mowed several times. So for it to look so good, that just didn't, it didn't seem like it could be possible that it would be Tom's phone. And most of the searchers and Philip Klein himself were skeptical that it was actually Tom's phone. But it was documented, bagged, tagged, and handed over to a sheriff's deputy who had been there at the search and then sent to an FBI forensics lab to be analyzed. The search continued, and they did find some shreds of clothing, a shoe, and a black pistol case that could have held a small handgun that would have used a 25 caliber shell. But these items were not able to be tied to Tom or to his case. In November 2017, Klein did his own luminol test on Tom's Durango that had been stored in the Meeks garage since it had been returned back in 2016. Klein claimed that there was blood all in the car after he did his test. But according to the Attorney General's office, the test had been done incorrectly. Now, here's the thing. If you need a luminol test to detect the blood, that means that it's not able to be seen by the human eye. And personally, after looking at all the pictures that I shared with you guys, I don't see how there could have been blood all in that car that you needed to do a luminol test for. The car was dirty when it was found. There was stuff all in it. Trash, Tom's stuff, an old costume. You could tell it was dirty. There were splotches of, it looked like paint or something on some of the seats. And so if you were going to have to use luminol to find blood, that would mean someone would have had to have tried to clean that car up. Now, it was pretty obvious from those pictures, no one had tried to clean that car up before they left it at the water treatment plant. It was, to me, left as is, like a teenage boy would have had his car, full of junk and some trash and randomness. So, to me, the only way they could have cleaned up all the blood was they would have had to have cleaned all the blood up and then put all the trash back in the car, which who's going to go to all that dumb trouble? You know what I mean? That seems highly unlikely. Anyway, on January 12th, 2018, the results of the iPhone that had been sent to the FBI lab finally came back. Everyone was shocked to find out that the phone actually did belong to Tom. The analysis revealed some interesting information. It stated that the weather sensors on the phone had not been activated, even though Canadian had received 26 inches of rain between November 24th, 2016 and October 14th, 2017, while the phone had been supposedly lying alongside the road. The sensors showed no signs of moisture. The analysis went on to say that a plug-in or charging event occurred earlier in the evening at Tom's house. The phone never showed an unplug event after that. Now, here's the deal. Tom's friends all said that he was very careful about keeping his phone charged, and he kept it in one of those charging cases, you know, that like goes on your phone, the big bulky black ones, and that he was never without it because he was always very concerned about his phone staying charged. But the phone was found with no case. So what happened to the case? But also, that's why the AG's office concluded that it would show a plug-in or charging event because the case was put on and then it never showed an unplug because he had the case on it and then eventually it just ran out of juice, period, and died. Remember, it said that there was no unplug event after that? So after looking at all the data on Tom's phone, it also showed that on the night Tom went missing, he had done a search for a suicide hotline at 9:12 p.m. And then, remember, the phone died at 12:23 a.m. on November 24th, 2016. It was not turned off. It died. Now, that's something else that has become a really hot topic was there has been no proof whether Tom committed suicide or if he ran away or if someone murdered him. But he did do a search for the suicide hotline at 9:12 that night. Another thing that was interesting about Tom's phone was that all the information on the cloud from his iPhone was missing. All the usual information that should have been there was gone. There were no texts, there were no pictures, no digital information. All of the IP logs and data logs were blank. Now, he and his brother Tucker shared an account. Tucker, on the other hand, had the usual thousands of pictures, texts, and all other data, you know, search on your Safari, things like that. So where was Tom's? What had happened to it? Where had all of it gone? It just didn't make sense. Rumors began to circulate that someone had purposefully been hiding the phone and had decided to plant it at the search of Lake Marvin Road that day. But why hold onto the phone all that time and then decide to leave it out to be found? What would be the purpose of that? Everyone was curious. Klein and Sheriff Lewis both began to point fingers at one another, saying that someone from the other group must have planted it. Klein blaming the sheriff's office and Sheriff Lewis blaming Klein's people. To be quite honest, it really sounds to me like Philip Klein and Sheriff Nathan Lewis let their egos get the best of them, and they just ended up in a giant pissing contest that helped no one, and especially not Tom, because they were so busy trying to point fingers at one another, and Klein showed corruption on the part of the sheriff's office, and Sheriff Nathan Lewis talking about how Klein was such an egotistical maniac that they were so busy trying to slander one another, they didn't help Tom at all. Anyway, now, the rumors going around town had increasingly gotten nastier and nastier, especially about Sheriff Lewis. Most of the rumors claimed that in some form or fashion, Sheriff Lewis was responsible for Tom's death. Whether he had helped cover it up or he'd actually helped kill him, all kinds of craziness. It was ugly. So the same month after the phone was found, Penny posted a petition on a Facebook group that had been put up to help try to find Tom called Moms for Tom. And she asked that a state law enforcement agency take over the case. By the next day, it had received 5,400 signatures. Sheriff Nathan Lewis sent a letter to the Attorney General's office in Austin asking that they formally take over the missing persons case of Thomas Kelly Brown. In February 2018, the Hemphill County Sheriff's Office was informed that two investigators from the Attorney General's Criminal Unit, Sergeants Rachel Kading and Chris Smith, had been assigned to Tom Brown's case. As soon as the agents from the Attorney General's office arrived, they immediately began their own investigation. They started by re-interviewing everyone associated with Tom's case. Next, they shut down the sheriff's office and went through the whole office. They looked at all the sheriff's department's reports, combed through their digital files, photos, call logs, and their videos. Agents Kading and Smith also wanted to put several people through a polygraph test, and they wanted to start with Penny and Chris Meek. They were asked a series of questions, and on some of those questions, they pinged as deceptive. In the Attorney General's report, it states that Penny and Chris both showed signs of deception when they were asked about possessing Tom's phone after his disappearance. They also showed deception on the polygraph when they were asked questions about moving Tom's body. Penny showed signs of deception on the polygraph when she was asked questions relating to Tom's location and having contact with him after he had disappeared. Tucker Brown was not polygraphed. Now, Tucker himself says that he was so very upset by everything that was going on, he didn't think that the polygraph would be accurate. And Penny says that after she and Chris went through everything they did, she was worried about putting Tucker through something so traumatic as that. So, there was no polygraph on Tucker. Now, I will say this. I know that polygraphs aren't admissible in court, but law enforcement uses them all the time. So, the Attorney General's office obviously thought that it would be helpful to them to put all these people through polygraph tests. And the Attorney General's office didn't stop with just the Meeks and Brown family. Next up was Sheriff Nathan Lewis. He also showed deception when he was asked if he had any involvement in Tom Brown's disappearance. There was another set of questions that he showed deception on, too. Penny Meek and private investigator Philip Klein claim that Sheriff Lewis showed them a photograph that was taken at Franck's gas station on the night that Tom disappeared. Now, remember, We had said that there was video footage, but from all over town, actually. But I had not heard until I read the AG's report, the Attorney General's report, that there was a still photo. But like I said, Penny and Philip Klein say that Sheriff Lewis himself showed them the photograph. But when Sheriff Lewis was asked about this picture, he said that it didn't exist. But guess what? He showed deception on this set of questions when he was asked about the picture. Now, I don't know if the picture existed or not, but the Attorney General's office has never seen the picture, and no one else has seen it either. So you're going to have to decide, is Nathan Lewis lying or Klein and Penny lying? I don't know. Like I said before, there's so much he said, she said, and finger pointing. It's very hard to tell who's being truthful, who's not, or frankly, who's just trying to cover their ass for mistakes that they made along the way. And it's pretty obvious that there were a lot of those. The Attorney General's office continued its investigation. They learned that besides a photograph, there was also video footage from Frank's gas station on the night Tom went missing. The video footage was from a camera at the Dollar General store that was close to the gas station. So from what I understand, the Dollar General store sat kind of up on a hill and looked down onto Frank's gas station. And so the footage of Tom's Durango and other footage was actually from the Dollar General store. Three different managers from Dollar General said that they had given the video footage to Sheriff Lewis. But Sheriff Lewis said that he never received footage from the Dollar General. But the Dollar General store employees say that it was given to the sheriff's department on the night Tom disappeared. And all of those employees that claimed that the footage was given to them identified Deputy Pine Gregory as the officer who picked that video footage up. Next, Sheriff Lewis claimed that he had seen the footage, but he'd never actually had the footage in his possession himself. So here we go. Changed it a little bit. Didn't have it. Never saw it. Oh, wait. I did see it, but I never actually had it in my possession myself. Okay. So a man named Ron Bishop, who did all the technical things for the Dollar General, supposedly had the video footage of Franks, and Sheriff Lewis just viewed it with him, but he never actually had it. Bishop, on the other hand, says that's not true. He downloaded the footage onto a thumb drive and then took it over to the sheriff's department himself, handed it to Sheriff Lewis, and then even showed him how to download everything and play the footage on the computer at the sheriff's department. When the when the Attorney General's office spoke with Bishop again a month later about this video footage, he was very different. In fact, in the Attorney General's report, it says he seemed very nervous, his hands were shaking, and he seemed anxious. And this time, Ron Bishop's story changed. He said, he really wasn't sure if he actually did give the video footage to the sheriff's office or not. He couldn't quite remember. Why would he go and change what he said? I mean, I feel like you would remember or not if you went to all the trouble that he said he did. Did you really download all that onto a thumb drive? Go over and personally do all those things for the sheriff? I don't think that'd be something you would forget. That's pretty specific. The Attorney General's office also obtained search warrants to look at Tom's Facebook and Instagram accounts. That also raised a red flag with the investigators. After Tom disappeared, his Facebook account was deactivated, but no one will take responsibility for actually deactivating the account. Philip Klein told the Attorney General's office that he thought Penny had deactivated the account, while Penny said that she thought Klein had done it. And then, again, later, Penny changed her story and said that she thought Tom's account had been hacked. Now, here's the thing. According to Facebook, the only way that a Facebook page can be deactivated is if someone has the actual password and login information to the Facebook account. And then you have to log into your Facebook or to that Facebook account and physically go in and deactivate it. It's a hacker can't do it. You have to have access to that personal account. So again, when the Attorney General's office looked at Tom's Instagram, it contained a few posts that stuck out to them. There were some posts that talked about celebrities that Tom admired who had committed suicide. His Instagram account is actually still up. And if you go to his page, the bio reads, "I'm gonna die a very young death, but that's fine. That's cool. That's not so bad. All my heroes are dead anyway, so at least I'll be in good company." So, does that mean Tom committed suicide? Not necessarily, but I can understand why law enforcement looked at this as a possibility. And remember, Penny Meek is the first person who put that idea out there. But we do know that earlier on the night Tom went missing, he did make several searches for a suicide hotline. And he had talked to Sage Pennington about jumping in front of a train. And then also, he has these cryptic posts on his Instagram account. And we don't know what was on Facebook because it was all taken down. We also don't know what else might have possibly been on his phone because the iCloud was blank. And isn't that odd? It sounds like somebody went to a lot of trouble to make sure all that information was gone. The Attorney General's office also spoke to Caleb King again when they found out that he was asking around about the passcode to Tom's phone. Now remember, Caleb King was one of Tom's really good friends that was one of the last people to see him before he disappeared the night before Thanksgiving. Well, Caleb King, that they asked him, why would you want Tom's passcode to his phone? Because supposedly no one had had it all that time, remember? Well, Caleb said that Penny had asked his mother if Caleb knew the code. So when Caleb's mom asked, he said no, he didn't know it. So Penny then asked if Caleb could ask around and see if some other friends might know the code. The Attorney General's office asked Caleb King's mother if this was true, and she said yes. She had actually saved the text messages and showed them to the investigators. So, again, Caleb King was cleared. When the Attorney General's office asked Penny why she wanted the code, she said that the sheriff's office wanted the code, not Penny. So she thought she'd be nice and asked some of Tom's friends if they happened to know the code. So who really wanted that code and why? Everyone claims that they didn't see the phone until it was found in the ditch on Lake Marvin Road. But if you don't have a phone, why do you need a code? And one thing that I thought was interesting was, remember, Tom supposedly never took that charging case off his phone. He was adamant that it needed to stay on the phone because he wanted to make sure his phone didn't go dead. He wanted to keep it charged. But there was no case on that phone when they found it, remember? And it also was in pristine condition. In a later interview with the Attorney General's office, Penny admits to having the phone case. Wouldn't that be something that you might should have shared earlier with people? And how did you get that case if you never saw Tom again? Now, in the Attorney General's report, it states that they think that the phone was placed on Lake Marvin Road, and they think that Penny had something to do with it. It's right there in their report in black and white. Even though the Attorney General's office had turned up more information, they kept hitting wall after wall, just like all the other investigators. None of the information was getting them any closer to finding out what had happened to Tom. And if you read the Attorney General's report, they say they do not feel like people are being truthful and giving all the information they know. And I mean, I think that's pretty obvious, or we would probably by now know what happened to Tom. Then on January 9th, 2019, Deputy Pine Gregory parked his patrol car at the end of Lake Marvin Road, about 12 miles from where Tom's phone had been found. Here's the deal with this. There's been reports saying that Pine Gregory was out there in the middle of the night, in the dark, on Lake Marvin Road, But there are official reports that document, yes, he was on duty. He was in his patrol car, but it was 9:30 a.m. He was not out wandering around on Lake Marvin Road in the middle of the night. That was some misinformation, some finger pointing that's out there. But there is documentation that it was during the daylight hours. Now, Pine Gregory started following a deer trail, hoping to find some shed antlers, but he found something different. About 200 feet from the road, under a thicket of trees, Deputy Pine Gregory found a human skull. He rushed back to his car and called the sheriff's office and announced that he had found a human skull. It had been 2 years and 2 months since Tom Brown had gone missing. Pine Gregory had spotted the skull in a thicket of cottonwood trees while searching the area for deer antlers, which is something he collects. A team of officers arrived to search the surrounding area of about 100 yards. So they covered a 100-yard area to search. They found a femur, a few smaller bones, a pair of tennis shoes, and the remains of a pair of blue jeans. They also found part of a Texas driver's license, which looked like it had been chewed on. They could barely read the name on the license, but it said Thomas Kelly Brown. Word got out immediately throughout the small, tiny town of Canadian that Tom had been found. We're going to stop right there for today because there is still so much more to say and lots of more murky, strange, back and forth information. I want to say thank you for listening today. And also, I want to apologize to you guys for our schedule being so inconsistent since we've been back from the holidays. I promise to you that we are going to get back on track, but the holidays kicked my butt schedule-wise, and I apologize for that. So I do promise to you that I am working diligently to get myself back on track so that things are consistent. Thank you for listening today. I would love to hear from you. I got some really great comments and some insight from you guys from part one. So please let me know what you think or your own theories or things you've heard yourself. If you remember, you can find me on Instagram at Texas True Crime Pod. You can find me on Facebook at Texas True Crime, or you can send me an email at Texas True Crime Podcast at gmail.com. Please remember, if you like the podcast, tell a friend about it. Word of mouth moves it faster than anything else. Also, if you like it, please go leave a 5-star review. Every time I get another good review, it puts it up higher on that list. So when someone's searching for a new podcast, it pops up quicker. I appreciate all of you. Stay tuned to next week, and I'll see you then. Bye.